My medical practice, which I practice full time, is radiation oncology, which is the use of radiation to treat cancer. I have a very busy full time practice here in Houma, Louisiana, which is about an hour outside of New Orleans. But in addition to being exceptionally busy in my professional practice, if you will, my second full-time job is doing that near-death experience research. And I've been taking that research very, very seriously, just like I would professional medical research that I do. My professional curriculum vitae is 7 pages long. I've done a lot of research over the years. I take it very, very seriously. And I understand the things that you need to think about, the meticulousness, and the importance of doing it right. So I brought all that skill set into my experience on the research that I did on near-death experience. And that led to, with the conclusions I got from the evidence, it was based on the best scientific and medical investigative techniques that we could possibly find for doing this type of research. I think everybody's got their favorite near-death experience accounts, but perhaps among my most favorite of all time was Vicky. Vicky was born totally blind. And in those born totally blind, vision is unknown and unknowable. And you can't explain vision to somebody born blind in terms of the remaining four senses. I tried it. It's impossible. Vicky was a professional singer, and she was being driven home one day after a performance, and there was a very serious auto accident. So serious indeed that she nearly died. The first time Vicky saw herself was when she had her near-death experience. Her consciousness separated from her body, and from her vantage point above her body, she saw herself laying on the gurney below. She didn't know that was her. She was horrified, actually, was her first emotional sense, because vision was so unknown to her for entire life. But it was after she calmed down a little bit and correlated the feel of her long hair, and interestingly, she could feel a ring that a father had given her all her life, and now, for the first time in her life, she was seeing it, and only when she correlated with her newfound sense of vision did she understand that that was her down there. Vicky went on to have an amazingly detailed, highly visual near-death experience. In fact, she described vision in the way many near-death experiencers do, and that's what's called 360-degree vision. That means she can simultaneously see in front of her, back of her, right, left, and up and down. Technically, it's spherical vision, and she was able to simultaneously process that. We've had many, many other near-death experience accounts that describe that exact same thing. Interestingly, talking to Vicky later, she assumed everybody on the planet had spherical vision like she experienced, because remember, she'd never known vision in any other way. And to this day, I think she has a hard time grasping how the rest of us have sort of a pie-shaped visual field and don't really see things the way she did that one time, that one amazing time during the near-death experience that she had. Being very meticulous and cautious in my research, one of the first things you have to do is make sure that the experience is valid. We ask many questions in our 150-question survey in a redundant fashion. That means basically the same question worded slightly differently at a different part of the survey. That way we can match up the responses and make sure that they line up, that they're sharing the same responses to the same basic question. The key thing is to know a few of the consistently seen elements of near-death experience that are the strongest evidence for their reality. For example, when you're under general anesthesia, it should be impossible to have a lucid, organized remembrance at that time. In fact, under anesthesia, you're typically so far under, with general anesthesia, they often have to breathe for you. I mean, you're literally brain shut down to the level of the brainstem. And at that point in time, some people have a cardiac arrest. Their heart stops. And of course, that's very well documented. They monitor people very carefully that are having general anesthesia. So I have dozens and dozens of near-death experiences that occurred under general anesthesia. And at this time, it should be, if you will, doubly impossible to have a conscious remembrance. And yet they do have near-death experiences at this time. And they're typical near-death experiences. They have the same elements and appear to have them in the same order as near-death experiences occurring under all other circumstances. And in fact, a critical survey question I asked was what their level of consciousness and alertness during the experience was. Well, even under general anesthetics, under those powerful chemicals to produce sedation, if they had a near-death experience under general anesthesia, their level of consciousness and alertness was identical to near-death experiences occurring under all other circumstances. There's absolutely no way the skeptics can explain that away. It's impossible. That in and of itself is some of the strongest single line of evidence that near-death experiences have to be independent of brain functioning. There's simply no way you can be under general anesthesia and have a highly lucid, organized experience like that, and especially one that's consistently seen throughout near-death experience research. So that's probably the strongest line of evidence we have that the physical brain, as we know it, simply cannot produce the near-death experience. It is astounding to me, too, that we have people that publish, write books, write scholarly papers about near-death experience that have literally never talked to someone who had a near-death experience. That is some of the most bizarre research I can possibly imagine. It makes no sense to me, and I'm sure everybody that sees this video is going to think, gosh, how is that even possible? How can somebody claim that they're doing near-death experience research and never, ever even talk to someone who had a near-death experience? Well, the answer is you can't. If you're going to investigate near-death experiences, you have to talk to the near-death experiencers, and you have to understand what happened during the near-death experience. You have to look at the evidence, as I've published, for their lines of evidence that all converge on the validity. That's what really matters in assessing the reality of near-death experience, not the hypotheses that these other researchers generate about how near-death experiences might occur. That's ridiculous. What really matters is, here's what happens during a near-death experience. Here's the evidence for the reality. Can you refute that evidence or not? And with regard to the skeptics trying to refute the evidence for the reality of near-death experiences, they haven't come close. They simply cannot explain away all of the lines of evidence that for near-death experience that me and so many other near-death experience researchers so consistently see. My only thought was I was developing the research behind God and the Afterlife book, and the research there was I just wanted to know the truth. I set out with that commitment that whatever I was going to find, I was going to publish, wherever that path would go. To my somewhat astonishment, as I kept digging into experiences, near-death experiences that were aware of or encountered God, I was amazed once again at the consistency of what was being described. I have 277 near-death experiences that either were aware of or encountered God. It's not a small study. So I just really wanted to publish what I found. There's no religious agenda at all with this. And in fact, if you talk to people that encounter God in their near-death experiences, it really seems to be, while it's God, it doesn't seem to be related to their prior religious beliefs. Whatever religious belief they had doesn't seem to affect the probability of them encountering God or what will happen when they do encounter God in their near-death experience. So God seems to be, in near-death experiences, very independent from religion. I've never personally had a near-death experience, and never, thank goodness, has anyone close to me had a near-death experience. I guess my interest began over a quarter century ago when I was going through the Journal of the American Medical Association, one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, looking for a cancer-related article. Quite by accident, I found an article that had in its title near-death experience. I'd never heard of that before. All my medical training up to that point had not really exposed me to the term near-death experience. So I stopped what I was doing, read the article, and was immediately astonished. Here was a description of near-death experiences occurring what I knew medically should be impossible when they were unconscious. Here they were occurring all around the world, elements in consistent order, very consistently observed among multiple researchers. I realized immediately on reading just that one article that if near-death experiences are for real, this changes my view of the universe. I mean, there's something going on that I simply didn't know, and I was astounded to think we might even have evidence. So as many years later after that, I set up the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation website. My goal in doing that was to learn for myself from the original source of evidence, that being people who actually had near-death experiences, to learn the truth. That's what I wanted to know with the best evidence that I could find, that being people that had near-death experiences and had the courage to share them with me and in turn have me share them with the world on the website. It wasn't too long after I started receiving near-death experiences all the way back in 1998, I realized, wow, no question about it. The consistency is really there. This is amazing. Medically, I can't explain this. Near-death experiences are, as best I can tell, in one word, real. I think each and every person on this earth at some time or another wonders, gosh, what happens when we die? Medical professionals, like everybody else, are going to say, gosh, well, is death in our earthly life, is that the end? And I'm amazed that more people aren't interested in that, that more people don't want to look for the evidence that gives us some idea that answers that core foundation question that I think is on the back of our minds for many of us throughout our entire life. It is amazing to me that there aren't more people interested in near-death experience, interested in those lines of evidence that suggest there really is an afterlife, that suggests that consciousness survives physical bodily death. I am amazed there isn't a flood of interest from other people in the medical community, the scientific community, and even more so in the public at large, sharing my fascination with near-death experiences, and especially some of those profound messages that we so consistently see in near-death experiences. I guess I've been fascinated with the big questions in human existence. You know, is there an afterlife? Is there a God? What is the meaning and purpose of our earthly life? So I guess I've thought about that for years and years. And as I kept reading near-death experiences by the hundreds and finally the thousands, I was astounded to see answers consistently being developed across hundreds and hundreds of near-death experiences, all remarkably consistent. So I guess I was somewhat excited about doing this research. I felt like I was in a pioneering effort and sort of on a forefront of potentially some great knowledge. But that was coupled with a little bit of fear. I mean, here I am a doctor. I'm quite prominent in my community in Houma. And here I am talking about research related to God, related to things that's ordinarily the domain of religion. So I was a little bit concerned. Would that be a concern to people? Would that be a problem? Would people wonder what a doctor's doing? Would this be a turf battle as I study doctor and some of the big questions of our earthly existence? I'm happy to say that my concerns were a little bit overblown. People have embraced this book. They love it. The feedback has been unbelievably positive. I've spoken at two different churches, a very liberal one and a very conservative one, and they've invited me back from both churches. So people are fascinated by this kind of material. They're fascinated by the evidence that God exists. What they've been taught to take on faith, what they've hoped would be true. Now, all of a sudden, we're saying, hey, we consistently observed God in near-death experiences. Over 200 near-death experiences, all remarkably similar about what people are encountering, about what people share about that later. And the news is amazingly good that they're bringing back. I was amazed, especially among people that encountered God, the unbelievable shift from how they would have responded to their thoughts about reality of God at the time they had their near-death experience to later at the time they were sharing their near-death experience, an average of 20 years later. Virtually everybody that had a near-death experience and encountered God shifted to believing that God absolutely is real and responded to that survey question as such. And that's not a surprise now, is it? They were convinced that what they saw was really God. God, as with whatever evidence they needed, however they wanted to, they've had years to think about it. They had plenty of time to consider, is this really God or is this really not God? And yet, by the hundreds, overwhelming majority of near-death experiencers that encounter God come away believing, hey, based on my personal experience, I now know beyond a doubt, not on faith, not because somebody told me to believe this, but by my own personal experience, that God is real. I considered it scientifically valid to word the survey question about whether they encountered God and a supreme being to ask it in, if you will, a binary fashion. In other words, did you get information that God or a supreme being does exist, or did you get information that God or a supreme being does not exist? Either one of those circumstances should have resulted in an affirmative yes to that question. That's why the narrative response that followed that question was so critical. You could read that and find out what exactly they were thinking. Out of hundreds and hundreds of people that responded to that survey question, I can't think of a single one that said, gee, during my near-death experience, I encountered information that God or a supreme being does not exist. Essentially, every single person that checked that survey question yes was communicating, yes, I encountered right during my near-death experience. And again, that's important. Not what they believed before or thought below their near-death experience or what they thought or learned after their near-death experience. This is information learned during their near-death experience. And that information, over and over again, hundreds of people sharing, yes, I found evidence that God exists in my own near-death experience. As a researcher, I'm data-driven. I really like to see the evidence behind it, and that has to have data that underlies it before I really accept it as being evidence for any particular point I'm trying to make in my near-death experience research. And so that's why this evidence about love is so interesting. I mean, here we have over 58% of people that had a near-death experience saying they encountered specific information or awareness about love in their near-death experience. Very exciting finding. Very much tells us that that's a very critical, important, common, very common part of a near-death experience that shockingly people just haven't asked that much for. And yet, for the near-death experiencers themselves, very often they'll share it's among the most important awareness they have during their near-death experience. When I was writing that book, I was very clear that this was information that addressed many people's diverse religious beliefs. So how was I able to do the research and then write a book on that? One word, courage. I was so committed to knowing the truth about near-death experiences and so committed to sharing that reality with the world that I was committed that whatever I found in my research, I was going to share with the world. And that's exactly what I did. And remarkably, that book has been very well received. I mean, when we talk about God in this book, the great majority of people, including huge talks with huge numbers of people at two different churches, one liberal, one conservative, were fascinated. They loved it. I mean, we had questions going on for about an hour at both churches. God in near-death experiences, the concepts of love, some of the spiritual information in near-death experiences seems to really touch a chord with everybody, whatever their prior religious belief would be. I think now more than ever, people are open to that. They're interested in that. And I think they're especially interested when the news is so profoundly good, as I discovered in my research. Yeah, people that have a near-death experience, and especially those that encounter God, may change their religion or they may not. It's about a 50-50. What's really interesting, and I think the take-home message is, even for those people whose firsthand personal experience in their near-death experience was an encounter with God, about half of them find complete comfort and security in the religion that they had. The religion, if you will, issues that I'm finding, God, the afterlife, and some of the other findings in my book, remarkably seem to fit in very well to a huge diverse religious beliefs. In fact, we asked specifically, what's your religious belief at the time you had your near-death experience and the time you shared it about 20 years later? Liberal, moderate, or conservative fundamentalist? And we have huge numbers of near-death experiencers in all three categories. So it doesn't seem to be what specific religion you are. It just seems to be near-death experiencers have this awareness, and they seem to be able to find a place of worship that's comfortable with their beliefs that are often heavily influenced by their near-death experience all across throughout the entire world and across a whole breadth of different religious backgrounds, including even non-Western religious beliefs. We ask a survey question directly that asks about the importance of their religious or spiritual beliefs and how they live it in their lives. And there was two questions for that. One, well, what was your importance to you of your religious spiritual belief when you had your near-death experience? And what about your religious spiritual belief and how important is that to your life now, 20 years later, right, when they're sharing their near-death experience? A mammoth increase in the percentage of people after their near-death experience believing that their religious spiritual life is much more important to them than it ever was before. They're thinking about it more. It's more important. It seems to be a factor in their life. It seems to help affect them make decisions in their life much, much more than it was earlier in their life before they had their near-death experience. Amazingly, and I asked that question directly, how do you consider the reality of your experience at the current time? 96.2% of those who encountered God out of four different possibilities picked the highest level of certainty. That's saying they believed that their experience, their near-death experience, was definitely real. I mean, that's just an amazing percentage. For somebody who has such an unearthly experience and encounters God as part of a profoundly unearthly experience, unlike anything they've had in their life, for 96.2 people to come back and say it's definitely real is a profound message. That really shows how confident they are that what they encountered was real. And that's not surprising because you see huge changes in these people's lives. People don't change their lives radically unless they have a very strong reason to change. And for these near-death experiencers by the hundreds, and actually in my research database by the thousands, they've had their near-death experience. Virtually all of them know that it absolutely was real. And of course, not surprisingly, they go on to make huge changes into response to what they learned during their near-death experience. It changed me substantially. What I learned about God was in many ways significantly different from what I'd been taught to believe in God. I grew up in a classic, if you will, Protestant church. And so what my research showed me was, to my amazement, different from what I would have believed I was going to find. But again, the evidence was so strong, and we had such a big survey over time, and these the narratives, when you read about how people describe encountering God and some of these unearthly encounters they have in near-death experience, it has been so profoundly touching to me that I've really changed. I've embraced what the near-death experiencers have to say. It's a much more positive view of God than I've ever had in my life, and it has certainly changed me professionally. I'm a more compassionate, loving physician than I've ever been before in my life, and that's made a huge difference in my practice. In fact, the leading survey of patient satisfaction is called Press Ganey. For 5 straight quarters of a year, my radiation therapy department has scored at the 99th percentile, which is amazing. And I'm almost certain, of course, a lot of that says a lot about these amazing people I work with, but certainly, you know, I'm also having a part of that too. And it's helped me to reach out to the staff I work with, to the other doctors, and certainly the patients that we serve in their battle with cancer with more courage, more compassion, and more love than has ever been possible before. And people appreciate that. I think it's really helped people live their life and their battle with cancer better. And it's really been interesting to see how I feel stronger, more confident, more loving about what I am as a doctor than I've ever been before. I think the concept of near-death experiences, that we're much more than our physical brain, that there really is a immaterial part of us that survives bodily death, is so radically different from what mainstream science believes and has taught for literally for centuries, that I think near-death experience evidence is such a huge paradigm shift that it's unfamiliar certainly to a lot of scientists. It is certainly disconcerting to them when it flies in the face of everything that they've ever believed or even taught in the classroom for years or decades. And so I think that there's a lot of scientists that in the mainstream that will just simply instinctively assume that it cannot be true and look only seek out the evidence that will help justify their beliefs. I think when you see the mainstream scientists push back on near-death experience and startlingly ignore some of the profoundly strong evidence that near-death experience is for real, certainly reminds me as a researcher, you know, unlike those types of scientists, we have to be, if anything, more open-minded than ever. We have to carefully study their arguments, study the concerns about the reality of near-death experience, and only after we've carefully considered the alternative explanations, if they've been found to be wanting, if they alternative, if you will, skeptical explanations don't explain near-death experience, then and only then do I go confidently before the world and say near-death experiences are real. And I've walked that journey. I've looked over every single argument against near-death experience that I can find. And by the way, there's over 20 of them. Over the years, and seemingly every year or two, some new skeptical alternative explanation of near-death experience comes along. And the reason that there's that many of these alternative explanations is very simple. And that is, there's no one or several alternative explanations of near-death experience that makes sense even to mainstream scientists. I think it really does. I think when you have the evidence that is so powerful, and by the way, I've had a lot of people share their near-death experiences that were skeptical scientists at the time they had their near-death experience. And I'm here to tell you, a near-death experience cures near-death experience disbelief. Whether you're doctor, scientist, whatever your prior belief about near-death experience, once you've had one, almost uniformly you know it's real. But, you know, it's true in mainstream science, to have evidence like this is very difficult. I think what I've seen from mainstream scientists that are attacking near-death experiences are, in general, they raise hypotheses. Brain electrical activity, brain chemistry, fragments of memory. I mean, there's all these hypotheses about why near-death experiences could occur, but almost never
will you find a person who's attacking near-death experiences who does it at the level of the kind of evidence we're talking about here? Near-death experiences and those born totally blind, near-death experiences and general anesthesia, the strikingly accurate out-of-body observations that occur in near-death experiences, even far from the physical body and far outside of any physical sensory awareness. This is the kind of evidence that makes mainstream scientists attacking near-death experience very uncomfortable, and in general, you're not going to hear them address it.
A lot of near-death experience seems to point to, if you will, a collective consciousness. For example, when you have a life review, sometimes you not only are aware of your own prior life, but you may be aware of what the other person you interacted with felt like, whether for good or for ill. And that certainly is one of the many lines of that all converge on the fact that there seems to be, if you will, in this universe, a kind of a collective, unified consciousness. And you're right, there seems to be that hierarchy. In other words, when you encounter someone in the unearthly realms of a near-death experience, they may talk about, somebody who's sort of a seemingly higher, used in the broadest term, a spiritual being, or certainly someone that they will go talk to or get some insights or some wisdom about dealing with a situation during the near-death experience. And of course, that ultimate supreme consciousness being God, no question there's that hierarchy. That kind of is very difficult for mainstream science to handle. You know, I'm not, when we talk about this and a hierarchy of consciousness, this isn't something that is speculation. This isn't something we're doing that's wishful thinking. This is based on evidence that being very consistently observed, many, many observations. And you're back to that fundamental scientific principle. If it's real, it's going to be consistently observed. And that's exactly what we're seeing here, sort of that hierarchy of consciousness consistently observed in a vast number of near-death experiences. Near-death experiencer shared. She was in these unearthly, you could call it heavenly afterlife during her near-death experience, overwhelming feelings of love and peace. And here in this near-death experience was God. And for the first time, this near-death experiencer in a near-death experience asked God directly, why me? Why was I allowed to have this happen to me, that being this incredibly beautiful near-death experience? I think God's answer was very meaningful and directly relevant to this question. God answered that near-death experiencer, love falls on everyone equally. This is what you needed to live your earthly life. So I think as you start thinking about consciousness, you need to be aware that there's sort of a supreme consciousness. There's an order and a purpose in the universe. I think it's certainly here on Earth is probably one, some of the lower level. The consciousness and alertness we encounter in near-death experience is off the scale in terms of what we're aware of in our earthly lives. You could have a life review in a near-death experience and encounter decades of your prior life in what would literally be less than a minute seeming of time in a near-death experience. So I think as you study near-death experiences, you have that rather exciting and rather startling awareness that there's that frontier out there, consciousness, sort of a unified consciousness, an order and purpose in the universe, and a purpose of, that's led to us being here in our earthly life. That is, I think, has been amazing to me as I've done the research and found that, and certainly amazing to people that have read my book and have studied this in their own way. And hopefully we're right at the frontier where more and more people are going to learn about this with further research, because I think that kind of knowledge could change the world. Anybody on the world can look up those near-death experience accounts that I reference in my research and read the entirety of the account and find out for themselves exactly not only what was shared in what I quote in my research, but also the entire context of the experience, what occurred before, during, and after that. So I think the open source research really is important for a couple reasons. One, it's transparency. We're making incredible claims. Shared consciousness, God, meaning and purpose of our earthly life, the importance of love in a way we never thought about it before. So I think transparency is important in that people can say, hey, here's that chain of evidence all the way down to reading the original count. We can follow it. It's transparency of research that has heretofore been almost impossible to find. But I think the second thing that kind of ability to look up the original NDE accounts accomplishes is it helps the credibility. Again, these are remarkable claims. There's life after death. There's a blissful afterlife for all of us. So to have people go to those original sources of evidence, that being the near-death experiences, read it themselves, I think it's really helping people all around the world that go through that path, take that journey, spend the time to read the near-death experiences that are really coming to learn, supplementing what we've learned as near-death experience researchers, that near-death experiences are real. You can easily see these patterns that we've been talking about. And I think it's really helping people understand not only that near-death experiences are real, but that they do have these profound, important messages that touch not only the lives of near-death experiencers, but I think you take that little piece of heaven back with you when you read a lot of near-death experience accounts, and it can certainly change lives, even if you've never even had a personal near-death experience.
So my name is Scott Bornstein, and I am a pediatric oncologist, and I take care of children, teenagers, and young adults with cancer. I could not do my job without the volunteers who donate their blood and their platelets for our patients. The reasons why platelets are so important for cancer patients is that a lot of the treatments we use to treat cancer can have side effects. And one of the side effects is it affects your body's ability to make normal blood cells. And so after you get certain types of chemotherapy, your body can't make platelets, and so your platelet count falls and it makes you more likely to bleed. And so one of the ways that we help and support our patients that get intensive chemotherapy is we have to give them platelet transfusions. I just want to thank everybody who donates their blood to help our patients. We could not treat our patients without you, and you have my heartfelt gratitude.
What if you could do one thing on Monday that might save a cancer patient's life on Wednesday? When you donate platelets, that's exactly what can happen. Platelets are tiny cells in your blood that form clots and stop bleeding. If you've ever fallen off your bike or cut yourself shaving, you've seen them in action. But these little cells do their best work helping cancer patients who often lack platelets due to the cancer or as a side effect of treatment. Platelets also prevent blood loss in patients undergoing surgery and organ transplants. Without platelets, patients wouldn't survive. They save lives every day. The challenge? Platelets are in constant demand by hospitals. And because platelets must be used within 5 days, new donors are needed every day. That's why we need you. Platelet donation is a little different than giving blood. Here's how it works. You'll make an appointment at a Red Cross donation center. During your visit, we'll draw blood through one arm, extract your platelets in a machine, and return the rest through your other arm. Relax, watch a movie, listen to music. A few hours later, you'll have donated enough platelets to help as many as 3 patients. So if you give on Monday, by Wednesday, she'll be able to recover quickly. He'll have a safe and successful surgery, and she will have the strength she needs to keep fighting. To learn more or schedule an appointment, visit redcrossblood.org/platelets or call 1-800-RED-CROSS.
I went through probably the hardest thing that I'll ever go through in my life when I was diagnosed with cancer. As I slowly began to process what was going on, I became pretty afraid and pretty scared that I might not get better.
When we got the phone call from the doctor that day, it was like an out-of-body experience. When he said, "Your son has leukemia," we were just in shock. Troy needed blood and platelets right when he was admitted to the hospital, as soon as he was diagnosed. One of the times when we were in clinic and Troy was receiving chemotherapy, he also needed to get some platelets. And we were waiting for them to come, and the nurse would come in and say, "Oh, the platelets aren't here yet." You know, another half an hour or hour would pass and they're still not here yet. There's a shortage of platelets.
My mom and I were both pretty concerned that I wasn't gonna get the platelets in time. And I became pretty afraid and pretty scared that I might not get better.
So watching Troy's health improve after getting blood and platelet products, it was amazing to see him go from this almost lifeless boy to a son who had energy and more life to him.
I'm extremely happy every single day to just be able to spend time with my family and just spending time with my friends again and playing sports with them again and being a part of the community at my school.
To all the blood and platelet donors, I just want to say thank you so much for helping my son Troy get better and giving him strength and giving him life. It means the world to me.